Richard Randall is on Colorado's 740 KVOR.
And I tried to avoid it yesterday. And avoid what? Avoid hatred. Thanksgiving. Tried to spend some time talking about Thanksgiving, in particular about folks who really, it's a simple question. We drive past people, or at least I do, I think all of us do, whether it's here, Denver, wherever, of people who are on the street. Now, generally, the people we see on the street are standing at a corner. They've got a sign. They're asking for help. And I used to give people money all the time. Seldom would I pass folks without helping them out. I thought that was helping them out. I'm not stupid. The sign that says, you know what all the signs say. I'm not stupid. I assume that actually the money was probably going to buy them a drink or alcohol, whatever. And you're like, Richard, well, that's really great that you're such a good enabler. And the thing is, I knew I was an enabler. And I also knew that me driving by and just ignoring them wasn't going to solve their problem. Me driving by and giving them, you know, $5 or whatever wasn't going to solve their problem. In fact, the past 5 or 10 years, I don't know how many times I've done, but I've done it several times where I go out for a day or a night or a combination of the two, usually around the holidays, because I think it's more dramatic and I'm more curious as to what it's like to ring in the new year when it's 15 degrees and you're huddled in a tent and you're just trying to get through that night to the next day, or Thanksgiving in this case, Easter, sometimes just normal days. This all goes back to, gosh, when I first started radio, there was a bunch of murders up in Denver near Union Station. Now it's all built up, but in the old days, you had Union Station that was facing downtown. It looks beautiful, still does. I spent millions of dollars remodeling it, and now it's still crime-ridden. A lot of robberies, some murders, a lot of drugs, needles all over the place, and it's Denver. That's what Denver looks like these days, whether it's the state capital or whether it's Civic Center Park or any of the other things. But it had me thinking about what it's like to be homeless. So I took 4 days, and I went homeless for 4 days, 4 days and four nights. And it gave me a better idea, not a complete idea, but a better idea of what it's like to be homeless. I spent 2 days down here, two nights down here. And the brief story, because I've told it before, I don't want to bore you with it, is that I slept under a tree down at Giuseppe's, was still open in those days. I tried getting into one of the shelters to sleep overnight, but they wanted an ID, and I didn't have one because I didn't want to be Richard Randall, so I didn't have an ID. They said, well, if you walk over to the police station, they'll give you one. In other words, they'll check your background, make sure you're not a rapist or a criminal, give you a pass or an ID that'll get you through the night, come back, and then we'll let you in. I went over to the police station to do that, and I came in, and I was bummed up as much as I could be. I mean, I still had fairly short hair, but I didn't smear axle grease all over myself or whatever, but I wore the rattiest jeans I could find. I drove over them with my car several times. I bought some clothes that were really pretty beat up from Goodwill, and I thought it was kind of a convincing bum. It turned out that I didn't really feel fooled, the people who were at the front desk, because they said something along the lines of, so, Richard, you're a bum tonight? Is that the deal? Okay, so that didn't work. Similar experience. I don't know if Sally Clark, she's running for mayor now, I don't know if she remembers it or not, but I thought I would panhandle and see if it's true that you can make $100 a day standing by the side of the interstate with a sign up that says you need some help and you panhandle. And I think I got $15 in 2 hours. And God bless one guy. He gave me, oh, man. Imagine this. So you're trying to get a handle on this, and now all of a sudden a guy comes up and he believes you. And you feel like an idiot because you just suckered this guy. You just lied to this guy. And he thinks he's doing a good thing by giving you $10. Gave me $10, and I couldn't do it. So I told him, I said, you know what, actually, I'm a radio guy, and I'm just out here to try to see how much money you could make in a day or an hour, and I can't take your money. And he said, well, you're not who you appeared to be, but go ahead and take my money. And doing what you're doing, you're obviously going to run into some people who could use it. So pass it on to somebody who could use it. And I was okay with that. Point, though, is I'm standing there, and Sally Clark pulls up at the red light. This was right downtown. And she's getting ready to make the left-hand turn onto, what is that, Bijou, I guess. And looks over and says, pretty cute bum, Richard. In other words, I wasn't much fooling people who knew me. But the point being is that in those couple of days, I ate at the soup kitchen that was downtown, and I didn't make very much money from panhandling. I think it was $15. It was cold out. I mean, it doesn't sound like much sleeping underneath a bush when it's summer, but when you're sleeping underneath a bush and it's winter, it's a whole other story. So I just sleep under a bush. Well, because I couldn't get into a shelter. And actually, that was good. It gave me a better idea, because I think God controls this stuff. It gave me a better idea of what it's like to really be outside as opposed to being inside the shelter. I slept under the bush because already by the first evening when it got dark, I was afraid. Not of anything specifically, but I was afraid of the unknown, of I didn't know what somebody's going to do if I'm out where somebody could see me. Are they going to steal my stuff? Or are they going to do something to me? So you hide underneath the bush. You do that for a couple of days. Then you go up to Denver where, and they suspected it was a railroad gang, that a bunch of, for lack of better terms, hobos who were riding the rails. And either as part of an initiation or something, they were killing people. Now, it may have been, some of the cops told me that it just may have been some sort of a vendetta or a fight that went on. He said, yeah, there are a couple of gangs of people who ride the rails, but it's not like street gangs the way you think it is. And there's not big turf wars over, Union Pacific. This is our turf. Stay over there on Burlington Northern, Santa Fe, or what. It's not like that. And said it's probably just a couple of dozen people. But bottom line was that there were people who were getting their heads cut off and left decapitated up there behind Union Station. In fact, I'll look up the date on this or the specifics on this in one of the breaks so I can tell you a little bit more about it. Slept in a coal car that night. And there was this just huge, big, empty field back there. And because of the murders, they had set up a couple of wayposts, I guess, for lack of a better term, actually just one, where they had a bunch of tents, they had coffee there, they had some food there, they had law enforcement there, and they had, ever see a construction project where they have some of those lights that just shine down? They had three or four of those. It looked like an oasis in the dark, to be honest with you. Two quick things before we go to the break. Slept in a coal car because that seemed by far to be the safest option to me, and it turned out it was, although I can tell you, you don't sleep very well in a coal car. Is it because it's just not very comfortable? Well, no, sleeping on coal is not all that comfortable, but you spend the entire evening half awake because you're waiting to hear if somebody's climbing up the ladder because they have the same idea of getting into that coal car to sleep. The oddest thing, though, was this. Imagine something about five or six times as big as a football field. It's the middle of the night, and you're walking from one area to another. And the vision is good enough that you can see another person walking. And there were little trails. You know how that goes, whether it's animals or humans. If you just leave them alone, they'll form their own little natural trail. And so there was a small little trail there, and I was on the trail heading one direction. There was somebody else, just a black figure, heading in the opposite direction. And we both did the same thing. We both got off the trail. I kind of circled around to the right. He kind of circled around to his right. we both made this huge circle to avoid each other, and then we got back on the trail and we kept going. And I remember it so vividly because it really just showed me that's what you do when you don't know what's going on. You're not going to say, hey, how's it going, or can I help you, or anything like that, or can I interview you? That was part of the whole object, right? No, you just try to keep as much space between you and the unknown threat. And I'm not going to try to, you know, make it into some big drama. It may well have been just a person who was looking for something to drink or to stay warm, for all I know, probably was. But the level of fear and paranoia on the streets when you're homeless and it's dark like that, boy, I felt that the other night. And I felt it during the day some as well. But it's generally, the sun's up, it's generally, it's pretty good. In the evening, it's not so good. You have somebody who threatens to shoot you and appears to have a gun to do exactly that. It gets very, very real, and you start questioning whether this was a good idea or not. We're going to take a short break. I'm going to finish up this little story. I went into this yesterday, and so I'm not going to go into the entire thing all over again. I want to focus on one aspect of it, and that is hate. And what real hate is, and what fear is, and what not knowing what somebody is going through is. And this relates, of course, to Club Q, but it relates to who do we hate? Why do we hate them? Do we hate people and it's not even based on reality? Is hate the deal, or did God have something else in mind rather than hate? Is there evil out there that gives rise to a lot of this stuff? I can tell you right now, there's evil on the streets. There's evil in people. There's evil in some of the people I dealt with and some of them that I talked with. And it's very real. Does it pertain to you? Richard, I'm not going to do that kind of crazy stuff like you. Get out of here. You know, the most we do is at Christmas time, we like to go down to Acacia Park and we just go skating at the little rink down there, skating outdoors in Colorado. How cool could it be? It could be very cool. I've done that with my kids when they were smaller. It was incredibly cool. What I didn't know is if you're under the lights over where the skating place is at, it's Christmas, it's Yuletide, it's people with hot chocolate and skates and laughter. If you go down to where Uncle Wilbur is at, it's a whole other thing. It's a dangerous thing. It's a whole other breed of character that is down there. Do I hate the people that were down there? No. Do I hate two people over the course of the day and the evening who absolutely were threats to me, serious physical threats to me? Do I hate them? At the time, I'm pretty sure I did. As I sit here this morning, I don't think so, but that's what we're going to talk about. Who do you hate? Why do you hate them? Does the media help you hate people? Absolutely, positively. Do politicians make hay of hatred? Do they use it as an issue to raise funds and to demonize their opponents? You better believe it. Hate is the overarching topic here today. I've got one open line. David's producing for me. Line 719-540-0740. Text number is working just fine. I'll take the break, and David will give you the text line number. We'll hit the ground running when we come back on the Saturday edition, 6 to 8 o'clock right here on 740 KVOR. The only thing I'd finish is to say it's on the podcast from yesterday. I shot probably 6 hours of video and maybe another hour of audio. I asked everybody permission to do it. I didn't want to embarrass anybody. And the goal was real simple, just to give you and me, not just you, but me as well. Drive by, you know, at night or during the day and you see people at Dorchester Park or under bridges and try to find out what the reality is, okay? And the reality is different than it was even a couple of years ago. When I first started out, it was first couple of years I did it, a couple of learning lessons. One is I learned that a lot of these people just wanted to be outside. They prefer to be camping, although it's cold, to being inside of a shelter where they have to follow all these rules. And I always thought that the only reason they didn't want to be in the shelter is because they had to be sober and they couldn't have drugs or whatever. And that's not true. I've since found out that for a lot of them, it's their pet but Richard, they have built a small area over here where they can put their pets for the evening. They don't have to worry about their pets. And, you know, the problem is for some of these people, for better or for worse, it's just the way they are. They have comfort and they want their pet next to them for protection and for comfort. And so that's part of the reason. I talked with one woman and she was just as serious as could be. She's like, I just can't stand having people that close to me. I can't stand having somebody a foot away from me on another cot or you know, their feet, a couple of feet from my face. A lot of them just said it's noisy. People are coughing, they're talking, and it's just hard to get any kind of sleep. You're not even comfortable in terms of trying to sleep because you don't know if somebody's going to try to sneak over and cop a feel or whatever in the middle of the night. So I learned a little bit about why people stay outside. A lot of them, however, a majority of them stay outside because of drugs and alcohol, not tolerated inside. That was what I learned early on in the past several years, because I do this at least once a year, every couple of years, certainly. Past couple of years, I found that it was pot. The main reason people have moved to Colorado Springs was because of legalized recreational marijuana. Now, you have to remember, now there are a ton of states it's legal, right? But at the time, I'm pretty sure Colorado Springs was the very first state that legalized not just medicinal, but recreational pot as well. And they were just honest about it. People who said, look, I can live anywhere and I can have my checks, because they still get, you know, checks from the government for all kinds of things. They have them mailed to an address that is a friend or a relative, whatever. And then they have the mail dropped off by their loved ones. But if I can live anywhere, I might as well live somewhere where I can get stoned. And a lot of them said, and this is 2 years ago, not previously. I'm trying to show a trend here. A lot of them said, well, it's just self-medication. And there was a place that was near the police station, oddly enough, downtown. It's a kind of a former quarry. And they called it the Concrete Couch or the Quarry. And it reminded you of an old-time hobo camp. I mean, there was tent after tent after tent after tent. It was wall to wall. And when I talked to the people there, all of them admitted that pot was part of the equation. A lot of them just said, well, yeah, I get stoned, and so this is the place. A lot of them said self-medication. And at first, I was a little bit skeptical about the whole thing because, yeah, self-medication, yeah, wink, wink, I get it. But the more I thought about it, the more people I've talked with, the more I realized it is self-medication. If you didn't have anything going on in your life, you'd pretty much been disowned by the majority of your family because of your lifestyle or them not wanting to enable your lifestyle. You were, whether it was true or not, you felt that the cars that drive past you, yep, some of them flip you off or say get a job or whatever. The majority just ignore you, but you feel that rejection over and over and over again. You're sleeping outside, you're in the cold, you can't trust virtually anybody there. You do make a couple of friendships of people that, hey, I'm going to, you know, go down to, it's usually the come and go down in that part of town, and get something to eat or drink. Can you watch my stuff? Because if I don't have you watch my stuff, somebody's liable to go through it and steal it. So I get the, yes, I'm going to do this because I'm self-medicating. What I found out last night was that it's not that so much, because there are a lot of places you could go and get pot. A lot of the people I talked with were born and raised here. They've lived here the majority of their life, and something jumped the track somewhere along the way. A lot of them, I'm here to tell you, it's mental illness. I saw more mental illness out there than I've ever seen before. It's always been there. It's always been, you know, part of the factor. But it was a huge number of people that I talked with, and a lot of them admitting that they're schizophrenic and that they hear voices and that the voices are evil and that the voices are demons that are talking to them from the minute they wake up until the time they try to go to sleep, and they hope they don't dream about it. And some of them, it's, well, yes, I can take some medication, and others, you know, I lost my prescription. I couldn't get it refilled. I haven't been able to afford to see a doctor. A million excuses or reasons, depending on how you want to look at it. So here's what, I got a little off track here. Started out wanting to talk about hate, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to turn the page on this. I would recommend, if you want, go back and listen to the podcast from yesterday. I'll revisit this at some point, but it'll probably be on social media because so much of this is visual. So much of this I videotaped, and you can see the people I'm talking about. It's not all depressing. Some wonderful people, little kids, 11, 12 years old, had told their parents, hey, this year, let's make some extra food, and then we'll put it into plates and put aluminum foil on it, and we'll drive around. And when we see somebody that's sitting outdoors and looks like they could use some help, we'll go over and give them some food. I saw three people. One was an older couple, a black family, maybe in their 20s or whatever, Hispanic. I need to get, you know, all the terms right because it's so important that we talk about the races these days. But there are a lot of good, decent, kind people out there as well. When we come back, we're not going to be talking about good, kind, decent people. We're going to be talking about hatred. I want to know, so who are the hate groups? Who are the hate individuals? Who stirs up these hate groups and these hate individuals? Is it people like me? I have a MAGA hat. I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative. I talk on the radio. I live in Colorado Springs of all places. I mean, you need to know that Focus on the Family, you know, they were vandalized with, blood is on your hands, right? The blood is on their hands. Is it really? Where is the blame, the culpability? Because I was respectful for the first day or two, and I think now we can talk about blame and culpability and how did we get to this place, and do we need to be in this place with all this division and hatred? And the answer is hell no, we do not. And yes, there are people to blame for this. I'm going to tell you right off the bat, lest you wonder, you know, if it just popped out of nowhere. No, it's the media and its activists that have pushed this, and they've pushed it too fast, too far, and have offended a great number of people who are absolutely tolerant, and they're not homophobic, and they're not racist, and they're not all of these things that they get labeled by the mainstream media. We'll pick it up there when we come back. If you feel like, Richard, you're wrong, I've been hated, and I've been hated because of my gender or my race, and let me tell you who the people are. And yes, it is Focus on the Family, and yes, it is people like you. Phone number 719-540-0740. And it should be covered, of course. You have a horrible shooting at Club Q, and it's covered not just here regionally or in Colorado Springs, but nationally, I'm certain internationally as well. And the narrative is actually pretty simple, and that is you have, on the one hand, you have the victims, the people who are hated, and then on the other hand, you have the people who are responsible for the hate, right? So it does always strike me that in many instances, the media and the politicians immediately go to the bigger picture because talking about the specific individual doesn't help them. And to the media, to a certain extent, you know, giving the background of this person helps them. But for the media and the politicians, almost immediately, they get more traction if they can expand that story out so that it does include Focus on the Family, so that it does include President Trump or Richard Randall or MAGA or conservatives or even sometimes folks who religious people or biblical people or evangelicals or Focus on the Family. Because now you can start to have story after story after story after story, and you can push a narrative. Here's my thing, and you should just know this. I don't know how many times I can say it, but my empathy, my sympathy, my heart goes out to everyone impacted by the shooting. And not everyone impacted by the shooting was injured or had a loved one that was killed. Everybody who was there, you know, they're going to suffer PTSD in one fashion or another. There are absolute great stories of heroism that comes out of that. And all I want is the truth, okay? The truth. But somewhere between the truth, we have to deal with perception. Now, people are going to tell you, Richard, hold on, you know this, you've said it yourself. Perception is the truth. Whatever people perceive to be the truth, that's the truth. There's some truth to that. I use the word truth too many times. But there's also a narrative, and I don't know that I've ever seen, maybe it's just because I'm older and I see it more, more cognizant of it, I've never seen a narrative pushed quite the way the media pushes the narrative now. And it does it in conjunction with activists. And is it, I guess my question is that good? Is that good for anybody? Well, Richard, of course it's good. I mean, if it's LGBTQ plus whatever, you know, you'd like to throw in there, and everybody, you look sometimes, you can probably find 20 different letters there. But it's got to be good for them because you're pushing a narrative of you simply want acceptance. You can call it normalization or whatever, but you don't want people to be hated because of their gender. So I'm going to have a real radical thought here. I don't think by and large, there's always exceptions. I don't think by and large, the average person who is gay or transgendered or identify it however you'd like to is hated in America. In fact, I think if you were to compare America to the rest of the world, especially a lot of places in the Middle East, where if you're gay, you're thrown off the top of a building. I tried posting that on Facebook. It wasn't a very convenient truth because they blocked me. And it wasn't because I actually showed the person being thrown off the building. I could have done that. There was video of it. There were still photographs of the person flailing in the air. I had a photograph of them standing on top of a building with a couple of the people who were going to throw them off. I didn't show this splatter photograph, you know, 10 stories down, or the people who had gathered around, and it wasn't enough that this person had died in a horrible fashion and it was just bits and pieces, but they had to stone the remains on top of that. My purpose in pointing that out is there was, at that point, a sizable group of folks who, you know, were trying to make sure that there was protection and acceptance for people who were gay in America. And they ignored the rest of the world. And these are the same people who, when President Trump said, we're going to have a temporary moratorium, he never said he was going to have a permanent ban. He said a temporary, because facts are important, a temporary moratorium on people coming in from a select few countries. Not all Muslims are being banned from coming to America. Not all Muslims from all countries are being banned permanently from coming to America. He wanted to get a handle on the terrorist threat. And in his mind, the quickest way to do this was to say, these are the countries that they will tell you are hotbeds of terrorism and most likely to try to have somebody infiltrate the United States. Easiest way to do that is to get a visa, to overstay the visa. Boom, we don't know where they went. Now the easiest thing to do is be one of 2 million people who just walk across the border this year, probably 5 million or so in the past several years. President Trump was trying to look out for the average American. He wasn't Islamophobic. The people who were phobic were the people in these countries who were killing folks who were gay. And all I was trying to say is for the people who wanted it both ways, they wanted to criticize President Trump for being careful about who he is letting into the country, and they wanted to call him homophobic at the same time, and every phobic in the world were simply wrong. And I wanted to point this out on Facebook and yes, have a photograph there, not a big, violent, hoary, gruesome photograph, but a photograph that said, this is the reality. And it's not, trust me, it's not this deal of, well, oh, you know what? You say it's so bad here, you ought to go there and see what it's like. If it's bad here, it's bad here. And if it's more horrible there, it's more horrible there. A little bit of perspective is never a bad thing. But somewhere along the way, I believe in this idea of equality or freedom of fear. Sometimes it goes to acceptance. And the example of that, I guess, would be I'm in a store. It was a King Soopers up on Baptist Road the other day. And we had a year's worth of arguing and controversy over restrooms. Could transgender people use the ladies' room? I stand outside at Target. And my daughter has to go into the ladies' room, and I have to stand out there and watch who comes and goes while she does that. Am I supposed to go in there? Some guys went ahead and went in there. I saw some people bring their daughters into the men's room because they were concerned about this. Is every Target in America a threat at that point? No, of course not. Are there incidents where that absolutely took place? Of course, yes. Did you read about them in the media? Probably not, but I could find them for you. In 5 minutes, I could find you a handful of cases that said that. My point, though, was I walked into a King Soopers, had to go to the men's room, and guess what? What a novel idea this was. You're not going to believe it. You have a problem, and you have the problem solved. It didn't take Elon Musk. It didn't take, you know, NASA or anybody else. It didn't take, you know, a ton of huge funding from the federal government to accomplish this and all kinds of legislation from Jared Polis or Joe Biden. The restrooms were labeled men, women, unisex. Or you could have said family, whatever the deal was. Problem solved, right? Wouldn't you think? But that wasn't a new concept. Because there were people in the trans community and the media who said, well, if you create this separate thing, you're not solving the problem, you're enabling the problem. The problem still exists and will only be solved when there's full acceptance of this person who is transgendered, and therefore they get to go into the ladies' room. And if you have some sort of a compromise, then you're compromising your values and what is fair and decent and honest in America. Really? Or is it just pushing an agenda? We'll pick it up there when we come back, because I've met this personally. I've stood there on Eli Bremmer's lawn, and I've talked with Riley Gaines. She's the swimmer who had to come. She tied, actually, Leah Thomas, the trans swimmer from Penn. But I learned something very valuable by just standing there and talking to her that the media never told me about this whole controversy about a man winning medals and breaking records, Olympic records and NCAA records and all of the rest. Did you just call him a man, Richard? How transphobic are you? Newsflash for you. Riley Gaines tells me, because the media wouldn't, that is, she stood in the locker room and was trying to squeeze, these swimsuits are so tight to be aerodynamic, trying to squeeze into her swimsuit, and the other female swimmers are trying to do the same. Leah Thomas is in the same dressing room. It's a little bit harder for him to squeeze into his swimsuit. Do you know why? He still had all of his junk. He had the boys. What, I mean, to be scientific, he had his testicles. He had his penis. He had all of that stuff still on full display in a locker room getting ready for a swimming event. But wait, I thought the media gave me the impression that he had gone through all of the, you know, the injections and the therapy and the surgery and all of this. Well, the media lied to you. How about that? Does that make me hateful to say I don't want him in that locker room with Riley Gaines or anybody else? I don't think that makes me hateful at all. I think it makes me have common sense and a sense of decency. In a sense of looking out, oh gosh, how bad is this? Men looking out for women. I'd rather have a guy like me, men looking out for women, than some creepy perv who decides that, yeah, I get to show my stuff off here and rumors that he has even been sleeping with some of the other swimmers. That's a rumor. Allegedly, I don't know if this is true or false or whatever. It is true that he had all of his stuff and is swimming as a woman. The agenda, the narrative, it pushes so far past what acceptance truly is that it ends up making people like me resentful. It doesn't make me transphobic. It makes me resentful because it's never, ever, ever enough. The common sense solution is never enough. And it's the in-your-face part of all of this, whether it's race, whether it's gender, whether it's socioeconomic, whatever it is. This whole push with Black Lives Matter and, you know, LGBTQ flags everywhere, and I'm an ally, and I put a sign out in front of my house that I support George Floyd and all of the rest, has harmed race relations and sex relations and all of the rest. It just had to go further and further and further, and you went past acceptance. And you alienated a lot of good, decent people who never would have opposed you, much less hated you. And I don't think they hate you, but they're resentful of the narrative and the media buying into it and the politicians using it as well. Take a short break. I'll get to text messages. If you'd like to call, 719-540-0740. And if you want to say, Richard, guess who's hateful? Not just today, but every day I listen to you on the radio, then just go ahead and call and explain to me why I'm hateful. Back at I would say it would appear to be, in all likelihood, it would seem one of the logical explanations. We go back to the whole debate of, you know, if somebody is killed, is it a hate crime that they were killed, or is just killing somebody involve hatred on some degree in and of itself? A lot of questions here. We're talking about who's hated, who's really hated. Who the media will tell you is hated? Who are the hate groups and who are the real hate groups? Who does the media tell you are the hate groups? Let's go to James. James, you're on 740 KBR. Yep, we lost you, James. James, call back. We got one line, 719-540-0740. Let me get to a couple of text messages here, and let's go with this one. The Marxist media works to create a hateful environment as part of the Marxist agenda. The Marxist Democrats also as part of the agenda to divide us. The proletariat and the bourgeoisie, the haves, have-nots, men, women, blacks, whites, etc. See, when you, I think it's 1920, when you say Marxist, you throw that in there, and then Marxist agenda, and then proletariat and bourgeoisie and all the rest. And I'm not making fun of your comment because your comment is spot on. It's just the language. Probably a lot of people in college would be confused by all of this. I've got in front of me a couple of articles. Politicians who flip-flopped on same-sex marriage. Well, it shouldn't be. Well, maybe it is a surprise to you.
Hello.
If you're younger and the mainstream media has done its job efficiently of not telling you the real news, then you probably would be surprised to know that Joe Biden has flipped on same-sex marriage. And President Obama has flipped on same-sex marriage. And Bill Clinton has flipped on same-sex marriage. Hillary Clinton has flipped on same-sex marriage. We got some technical issues here in terms of playing you the audio of all of these, but they're not hard to find. They're on Twitter. They're on YouTube. They're all over the place. If you search for them, they're not going to be just out there any old where. Dick Cheney changing his mind. Rob Portman. See, when we get down to the Rob Portmans, Now we got a little bit of a problem here, right? Can you agree with me that Senator Rob Portman is not on the same tier of importance as Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton or Joe Biden or Barack Obama? So did they just say that marriage, because in essence it was, marriage is one man, one woman. Did they say that just because they believed it was true, or it was politically expedient, or have they seriously just changed their mind on the issue? I don't know. Let's go back to James. Is that who we got there? James, you're on 740 KVR. James, what do you have?
Hey, Richard.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk about, we've spoken before about the trans people participating, and I've told you that I will follow anybody who will actively work against it being done, and nobody's doing anything. And I think it's because it's a hot button issue that really nobody wants to work about. I mean, nobody really wants to correct. It's just something that's nice to talk about.
So I've got a great article. David's producing for me today, does that every Saturday and sometimes during the week. He is a bright guy. He's a great producer. And like Ryan and Jason Hunt, other great producers I've had, they know me so well, they don't have to wait for me to ask them, can you find me this? he comes in this morning with, I don't know, probably 50 pages worth of stuff. And probably the very best one gets to the heart of what we're talking about. And that is, why do we hate each other so much? Five reasons that anger is an epidemic. We'll get to that. We're making a list. And James, hang on a second. I'll get right to you. We're making a list. And this is the way I want to break it down, just logically. And that is, who in America or in the world is really hated? And in my opinion, if it's really hated, there's a good reason why it may really be hated. And a pedophile would be somebody, I think, who deserves to be really hated. Pedophiles come in different genders, but primarily they are male. Does that mean that all of their victims are male or female? There's a group called Colorado Ped Patrol. They're online. It's worth seeing. Michelle Marin is the person who told me about them. They work primarily out of Denver, but they'll go to Pueblo, Colorado Springs, etc. They pretend to be a 13-year-old girl online on one of these apps. I get confused. I thought maybe Grindr. Doesn't that sound like a gay app or what are some of the other apps? I can't remember. There's Grindr and another big
Tinder.
One. Tinder, that's the one. All right. So apparently they're heterosexual. They're whatever you want to be, apps or whatever. So they get on. They pretend to be a 13-year-old girl. And then they make a meeting, meet at the park by the mall at 11 o'clock or whatever. And they talk about what they want to do, you know, beforehand. And then all of a sudden this guy shows up, but there's no 13-year-old girl there. There's three guys with video cameras. And if the guy wants to, what are you doing here? Oh, I'm just waiting for a friend. Really? Are you waiting for this girl here, this photograph of this 13-year-old girl that you thought you were meeting? Well, guess what? I'm that 13-year-old girl. I was the one who was texting you. And so they do this over and over and over again. A couple of points. One is, it's awesome. And I need to reach out. Michelle Marin told me I should have, and I should have a long time ago. Reached out to these folks, had them on the program, and talk about the good work that they do. There is a stereotype out there, and I think it's a stereotype, that all homosexuals are pedophiles, or that all pedophiles are homosexuals. And let me just say this. I don't think either one of them is true. So set that hatred of Richard Randall aside. I'm not calling all pedophiles homosexual. And I'm not calling all homosexuals pedophiles. There are, in fact, some pedophiles that are female, not very many. And while it is true that a lot of the encounters that these pedophiles want are male on male, it's not exclusive. A lot of them are looking for young girls as well. And in fact, I can prove my point because I can think of two groups that I follow online specifically who are gay, and one is called Gays Against Groomers. And it's simple. They're gay. They don't want any of this grooming crap going on where you're trying to indoctrinate or teach some heterosexual sixth grader or six-year-old that, well, don't be so quick about deciding that you're male. In fact, let's have you go to a couple of drag queen reading hours at the library or at your school, and we'll start exposing you to a lot of this stuff. I hate that. Does that mean I hate a drag queen? Look, I don't care. You know what? Do whatever you want to do. You want to have a party and dress up like a woman? Then go ahead and do that. Leave the kids the hell out of it. And there's videos, it's not hard to find. There's videos online. Drag queen, you know, show at a bar where you have actual parents who bring, it looks to be like a 7 or 8 year old girl to a drag queen show, event, whatever. I get so angry, I'm having a hard time talking sometimes. And Richard, that doesn't sound that bad, really? Because in the video, you have the drag queen standing there, and drag queen still has all the junk, right? You get this. They dress up like a woman, but they have all of the stuff. And there's a 7 or 8 year old girl who is feeling the crotch on videotape of the drag queen to see that all of that stuff is still there. That's appropriate? Hell no, it's not appropriate. Do you think I might hate the people who do this? The drag queen who allows that to happen? The parent who allows that to happen? The bar owner who allows that to happen? If you're a drag queen and you think you're a decent person, as soon as somebody says, hey, we'll go over there and you can see it's really a guy, then boom, you're out of there. Right? Do you not have any morals? Because you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And if it's all okay to dress up like a woman, and that doesn't make you some sort of a creep or anything else, the fact as soon as you have, can you imagine if I were at an event, a rally or a speech or something, and I somehow, and I'm talking worse than Joe Biden. I mean, a person says, go up and put your hand on Mr. Randall's crotch. Could you imagine that? I'd be kicking somebody's ass. I got to tell you that right now, whether it's the parent, the organizers, whoever. So is there a place for hatred? Yes. Is it based on the person being a drag queen? Well, no, not really. It's based on the inappropriateness of children and adults and the interaction there is what I'm trying to say. So I'm trying to tell you that it's fine to be angry and to hate people. I don't want to get into it. I cannot tell you as a reporter and an anchor for KKTV. I anchored on the weekends during the week. I covered a lot of trials. You want me to tell you about the trial where the grandfather sexually assaulted his grandkids year after year after year? And he got away with it because he told the victims that if they told anybody, not that he'd kill them. That doesn't work. Little kid doesn't understand you're going to kill me. Grandfather said, if you tell anyone, I'll kill your mom and I'll kill your dad and I'll kill your sister. And he got away with it for years. Quick addendum. Not many times I've had to be called out by a judge, and I'm proud of this one. On my KKTV, you just heard the facts of the case. So no cameras in the courtroom, but you can have cameras in the hallways. You can have cameras outside. So Mr. pedophile grandfather has to go to the men's room. So he and his attorney go walking down the hallway to the men's room. My photographer gives me a heads up because I was taking notes, and all of a sudden, boom. So we're out in the hallway, and we've got the camera rolling, and we're waiting outside of the men's room door. And the way it works is the camera guy is in front of me. I grab the back of his belt so that we can walk backwards and I can get the people behind me to make a lane and so that my camera guy doesn't trip. But he's got full face of Grandpa walking back into the courtroom. We get into the courtroom, and there's a motion to hold me in contempt of court. No cameras in the courtroom and all of this. I was delighted to go up in front of the judge. Do you know why? Because I knew I was in the right. I didn't shoot a damn thing inside the courtroom. I knew I could shoot outside in the hallway. They didn't like it. And the judge didn't expressly say, right on, Richard, I'm glad you showed this creepy perv of a grandfather for people to see. But I didn't do anything wrong. They had their little argument. No issue here. Mr. Randall, sit down, and we went on with the trial. Let's go to the phones. James, I apologize for you having to wait quite so long. It is what it is. James, welcome aboard. What do you have this morning, James? We may have lost James. All right. We're going to free that line. Here's one of the problems is when you have one line and you put somebody on hold, sometimes that line is taken up. And if another person tries to call in, it looks like it's on hold. And so if you're out there, James, I think you and I may have just agreed on something. I'm not sure. We don't agree on a lot when it comes to the agenda of Black Lives Matter and folks like that. And when I say that I think Black Lives Matter is a hate group, I think it is, and that goes back to all the rioting and the attacks on police, et cetera. When I say Antifa is a hate group, it's the same thing. I go back to all of the buildings that were burned, all of the attacks on people in their cars, all of the attacks on folks in law enforcement. Does that mean everyone of either of those groups is hateful, et cetera? And the answer is no, it doesn't mean that. But by a preponderance of the evidence, I can go in front of any jury and show you that they are hate groups based on their behavior, based on the things that they say, based on the things that they do. And it may be that, yes, somebody had a good idea to say that, you know, Black Lives Matter. You know the retort is going to be, so all lives matter. And I've heard tons of black folks, law enforcement and politicians and all the rest say it. Well, we're saying that we get that. Yes, we know your white life matters and you're Hispanic and you're wait, they never talk about that, do they? It's always white and black. When I have a thing here that says who the media tells us is hated. So the media tells us that LGBTQ plus is hated. They tell us that blacks are hated. They tell us that women are hated. And then I have in tiny print down here, they have Jewish, Latina, and Asians. Because they never really talk about hatred toward those groups. If it's convenient, if they can find a conservative or a Republican or some group of idiot, quasi-Republican, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, anti-Semites, and all the rest, if that's convenient, they'll make it into, yes, there's a ton of anti-Semitism toward folks who are Jewish, but if it doesn't fit the narrative, if it's somebody who is prominent or black saying that, or if it's Mel Gibson, yes, we're gonna jump all over that. But Asians who are, you know, pushed in front of subway cars and beat up over. Look, get on Twitter. You don't have to take my word for it. Get on Twitter. Follow Andy No. He's been on the program several times here. He's friends with Michelle Malkin, with Michelle Marin, and he is Asian. And he documents a lot of crimes against Asians around the country, has videos over and over and over and over again. I don't know what the answer to this is, but I can tell you the majority of the perpetrators in those crimes are black. I had no idea that for whatever reason, apparently a certain, and this not all people are black, for God's sakes, don't go there. It's a percentage. It's a sliver. Is it 1%? Is it 0.5%? I don't know. But I see crime after crime after crime after crime of Asians being hurt, apparently for no reason. Sometimes it's for robberies. Sometimes it's just a little old lady walking down the street and boom, some guy clocks her in the head, gets her down, kicks her a bunch of times, and then walks on as if nothing happened. Push somebody in front of a train. Do you see those on the evening news over and over and over again? No, you don't. Why is it somebody would do something like that? I don't know. I don't know. And it's the same thing, you know, are folks who are Hispanic or Latin, are they victims of hate groups? I don't have, in my lifetime, I've had a dozen Hispanic friends going back to, I guess, high school, or actually eighth grade, and going from there through college. Joe Trevino, one of my best friends in eighth grade. Roy Rodriguez, one of my best friends in college, taught me how to ski. How's that break your little damn stereotype? Oh, Richard, you have to list all of you. Got such a select little group of, Ralph Harvey was one of your best friends in college, and he was black, so now you're proving you're not racist? No, I'm not. I'm trying to tell you that, first of all, I hate the fact that I even have to mention something like this as if I have to prove to you that, oh, I had a token white friend or a token black friend or any of this. I'm sick and tired of all that. Friends are friends. I never particularly thought of them as Hispanic or you know, Dutch Indonesian or Jewish or whatever. I didn't know anybody who was Jewish until I got to college. There's one beautiful, Elaine was her name, one beautiful Jewish woman. Oh, my God. The attraction. Was it because she was Jewish or anything? No, it was because she was stunning and she was beautiful. But did you ever date anybody who was Jewish? Turns out I didn't. I would have dated her in a heartbeat. There was nobody else who came along in my life that was the case. Did you ever date anybody who was black? No, same thing. Nobody ever came along in my life that would have been a deal, but I'd have no opposition to that. Did you ever date anybody who was Hispanic or Puerto Rican or anything like that? Does Yolanda Calendaria sound Hispanic enough for you? The answer to that is yes. So what's the difference between why some and why not some others? Somebody Asian in there? Yep, somebody Asian in there. So you're only racist toward these groups? No. As I went through life, I was only attracted to certain people, or certain people were attracted to me. It's not always about race. All right, short break. When we come back, we'll talk about who is really hated. Pedophiles are really hated, and I hate them. who the media tells us we should be hating or that I do hate. They tell me I hate LGBTQ, blacks, I hate women, I hate folks who are Jewish or Asian or Latin. The media tells me I hate all those groups. How can they prove it? Well, focus on the family, for God's sakes, Richard. Or this gay marriage thing, one man, one woman. Oh, ignore what Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and Barack Obama said before. Pay no mind to that. That's all behind the little green curtain over there. Short break, 719-540-0740. Text messages as well. When we come back on the Richard Randall Show, the Saturday edition, the hate-filled Saturday edition. And if you think I'm hateful, shoot me a text and tell me why you think I'm hateful. Because I don't feel hateful. Back after this. And I don't think they reflect the average American at all. And the average American, what's that? Well, that's the average American. That's a certain amount of folks who are black and Hispanic and Asian and different educations and different income groups and different genders, different religions, all of this kind of thing. And they don't care about it because the media has their narrative. So they're going to carry whatever it is. Real quickly, I want to go to James here. But David, you were just telling me a study because I asked you to do on the trans thing in terms of the average American. Do they want their daughters, their granddaughters, their nieces competing against transsexuals?
Right around 70% strongly opposed.
Strongly opposed. Oh, whoa. But that's only conservatives and Republicans, right? I mean, Democrats, of course, based on everything in the media, they're all in favor of all of this. And the answer is they're not, by large margins. This polling is consistent over and over and over and over again. The only people who want this are the Leah Thomases of the world. My God, even Caitlyn Jenner is completely opposed to this. And now he catches all kinds of crap from his community because he's not following the narrative any more than he caught crap because they caught a photo of him driving in his little sports car with a MAGA hat on because he identified as a conservative and a Republican. James, you're on 740 KVOR. I do apologize for our phones and all of the issues. Good morning, James. What do you have? Hey, James. James, we got real problems here, and I don't know how to solve them. We got a commercial break coming up here for news. We're going to see if we can solve it on our end. What we may end up doing, James, can you hear me? What we may end up doing, James, is having to hang up on you. All right. So, James, if you're out there, try calling back again. Like I said, we've got – this should be resolved, I'm told, sometime maybe February or March. We're redoing six radio stations and all of the studios, and it's complex. That's all I can tell you. Everybody is doing the very best they can to work around this. Text message. Here it is. Text messages do seem to be working okay. Hate is one thing. Malice is another. Hate may or may not seek justice. Malice seeks only death and destruction. Seek the Lord. While he may yet be found, you will find justice there. I think, and certainly after going homeless with these folks, I don't know, 60, 70, 80%, I was stunned to find out how many of them, and they weren't sucking up to me. And I didn't ask them a leading question that gave the answer I wanted or whatever. They all volunteered. When I said, what do you have to be thankful for? Many of them were thankful it was a sunny day. So if they got out of the wind, they could be warm. Because they can't stay in the shelter all day. That's a whole other issue. But overwhelmingly, at least 80% of them said they were thankful for a relationship with God. Almost all of them identifying as Jesus Christ. And I guess it didn't surprise me because when I thought about it, in your toughest of times, what do we do? I mean, are we fair weather Christians, right? You whip along, everything in life is going good. Maybe you remember to say a prayer here and there when life is great. But boy, when it takes a downward turn, now I need you, Lord. Now I need you to come through for me. I know I've been absent here a little bit. The good news is we don't have a punitive God who says, screw you. I haven't heard from you for 8 months. Now all of a sudden you're knocking on the door and you want me to help you? At least the God I believe in. the one that I have been taught, is more forgiving than you and I are. Way more forgiving. It didn't surprise me that people who are down on their luck and are having a hard time find that a spiritual relationship is one of the things that helps them get through from day to day. And virtually all of them, there was no long-term plan. I'm an alcoholic. I just want to make enough money today that I can buy some alcohol for tonight and for tomorrow. My biggest worry daily, it's not food. It's not cold. It's not frostbite. It's, am I going to be able to buy alcohol tomorrow? I talked with people who are very, very honest. And that guy, the guy who all he wanted was money to buy alcohol the next day, he told me one of the things, two things that he had to be thankful for. That it was a sunny day. And that he felt the presence of Jesus Christ helping him through what he was going through. We'll take a short break. Talk more about hatred when we come back. The media tells us we're all hatred-filled, and hatred is the explanation for everything. And I'll talk about Club Q and tell you that homophobia and transphobia and all kinds of hatred, be careful before you jump to that conclusion. Be careful before you jump. I know that's the narrative. Be careful before you jump to that conclusion. It's a horrible tragedy. There are heroes there. There is loss there. You want to say a prayer? My God, there are so many people. A prayer of thanks for the heroes there and prayers for those who have lost someone or been injured. Shortly, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But right now, we're going to take a break for news and some commercials. We'll try the phone line one more time, 719-540-0740. David's producing. He'll give you the text line number, and we will be back after. Phone number is 719-540-0740. So actually, this comes in from a friend of mine. And I guarantee you, I went shooting last night at Magnum South. I was surprised I didn't see him there because... No man, and we've known each other for 20, 30 years, whatever it is. It's the weirdest thing, and I kid you not, almost every time, not every time I go there, but it's amazing how many times I'll go there, whether it's on a Sunday, whether it's in the evening, whatever it is, and I run into this guy. He's a good guy, great wife, great shooter. In addition, my life is better because... I've known him and played sports with him. And that's how, you know what, that's one of the ways you meet a lot of people, right? It's just bowling or whatever it is. This one, Richard. I totally agree. I believe that the media is the problem. Why is it that this shooting is constantly front page news? It was a tragic event. Would the media be all over this if it was not a gay bar? And the answer is no. And that's why I say the problem, and it creates hate, but I think it creates, for at least me, and you're not going to like this answer, but like I always say, my job is to be honest. All of this collaboration between politicians and activists and the media taking every opportunity, in this case, this horrible shooting. And did you hear the part where he said this is a tragic event? Okay, because I don't want you thinking that this guy is, you know, just, oh, well, he's, you know, some hardcore conservative who just blah, blah. That's not the case. But the case is, if this were a shooting at just a regular bar where somebody went in and shot and killed five people, injured a bunch of other people, it wouldn't get the attention. And let's say that it was, let's say it was a conservative group. I decide to have a conservative group, not a hateful white supremacist group, but just a bunch of people who are black and Hispanic and white and Asian. And just incidentally, when I say, you know, I've got people that have different pigment than me, the common denominator is not the color of our skin. It's usually our interest. A lot of times it's sport. A lot of times it's shooting. And it's also that we're all conservative. A lot of them, folks have been in the military and whatnot, but we want the American dream for ourselves, for our loved ones. This guy wants the American dream for himself and his wife and his friends, his neighbors. I mean, we all want that sort of thing, but there's no big agenda for the American dream. When was the last time you read or saw a story talking about the American dream and how it's not out there and that we've been lied to about it even being a possibility? When I talk to young people, or you do it, you talk to your children or your grandchildren, and you ask them about the American dream. You ask them whether they think it's, I know this is old school, these days are gone. And you can text me and tell me if I'm wrong on this, but the idea that you can get out of high school, and I don't care if you graduated, I don't care if you didn't graduate, you got a GED, I don't care if you went to college, whatever your path is, and a lot of people have realized the path doesn't have to be college. You can get out there and you can work hard and make a ton of money and you can learn whatever that industry is and go into business for yourself. This idea that, well, but I got a college degree in studies of Native American blossoms in the Anasazi age. Well, aren't you so much more special than the person over here who didn't do that? Who decided based on his uncle and his dad's interest in cars and all of the rest that he liked working on cars. He liked tinkering with them. He liked making them better and faster. And then he figured out he could have his own business. Boy, you're so much better than him because you got that college degree, huh? I'm tired of the BS. But what I'm here to tell you is that nobody looks out for the average American anymore. It's all special interest. And I can prove this texter's point a couple ways, right? I don't recall the name right off the bat. The fact that I don't recall the name tells you everything, right? Because I recall Michael Brown's name. He's the guy who got shot by the police officer because he attacked the police officer in Ferguson. Hands up, don't shoot. You remember Hands Up, Don't Shoot. You remember all of the anchors on television, the liberal outlets, sitting there and out of solidarity, putting their hands up in the air and saying, hands up, don't shoot, except it never happened. Eric Holder and the Obama administration and the Department of Justice and the FBI searched high and low. And what they found in the community was the guy that was with Michael Brown after he had just stolen some things and roughed up a guy at a 7-Eleven or whatever, and then was walking down the middle of the street. And when the cop told him to get on the sidewalk, had to have a confrontation because God knows, you know, if you walk down the middle of the street, if I walked down the middle of the street and a cop told me to get on the sidewalk, I'd get on the sidewalk. And if I didn't, would it, you know, be cause for a big, huge confrontation with the cop just doing his job? It wouldn't be. My point, however, when it comes to Ferguson is the guy who was with Michael Brown says, hands up, don't shoot. There were a couple out of like 60, 70 witnesses, whatever. The report's online. I think it's 89 pages. Read the whole report. Here's what you're going to find out. Virtually everyone who witnessed the incident themselves, firsthand witnesses, eyewitnesses, said there was never this hands up, don't shoot, kneeling on the ground, hands up, never a hands up, don't shoot while he was standing there. The confrontation is just like it was reported to be. This guy reached into the police car and started punching him, tried to get his gun. Goes away. The cop, you know, tries to get him to stop and to arrest him. He turns around and he bull rushes the cop, and the cop shoots. But do you know what happened? These people would privately tell an FBI investigator or tell the grand jury what the truth was, but they were afraid to tell the truth in their own community because it didn't comply with the narrative. And there were others in the community who either hated cops or hated folks who were white, and they wanted to carry this narrative, and it wasn't true, but there were people who were afraid to tell the truth. I mean, half of this stuff wouldn't even be going on if we just knew the truth. So to get to the point, I know who you are, that I just got here. About, let me read it again. I totally agree. I believe the media is the problem. Why is it that this shooting is constantly front page news? It was a tragic event. Would the media be all over this if it was not a gay bar? And the answer is no. So a couple of incidents come to mind. A couple of years ago, you have a truck driver, middle of the night, he's driving up in Denver, and he gets in a collision. There's somebody who's in the country illegally who is drunk, runs into the truck. Truck crashes into a pillar or something on the side of the road. The illegal drunk guy, it's a hit and run. He takes off. He leaves the truck there, except there's another factor you should know. He drove away, and in his rearview mirror is a truck on fire with flames. Because the driver of the truck was incinerated. He burned to death. Don't confuse this with the one that was coming down out of the mountains and killed a whole bunch of other people because he ignored the runaway truck lanes and the brakes and all this. This is just a regular old middle-class white guy. I think he was single. I think he was heterosexual. But he was burned to death. Think about that. Burned to death. Trapped inside of his truck and burned to death. They eventually found the hit-and-run guy. They eventually put him in jail for a little bit of time. By law, they're supposed to turn him over to ICE, immigration, right? Supposed to turn him over to ICE. They refused to do that. When finally it looked like they were ordered to do that, guess what they did? ICE is supposed to show up like at 4 o'clock. They accidentally released him at 3 o'clock. The fact that you don't know his name, and you know the names of George Floyd and Kyle Rittenhouse, all the rest of these people out there, tells you a media agenda. There's another woman, Thunderheart was her last name. And, you know, I remember her because she's from Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. And she lived, I think, on Broadway or someplace in Denver. She was a hit-and-run victim, illegal alien who is drunk, drives over and kills her. And you didn't hear her name. Same story. Preferred treatment because you're here illegally and you are drunk. And they drove back to Pine Ridge for her funeral there. The biggest news out of that wasn't that this wonderful woman who was a grandmother. I remember the photograph of her wearing a Broncos jersey because she was a big Broncos fan. Drove her back for a Native American funeral in South Dakota, Pine Ridge, like I said. And one of the motorcycles on the route up there that was in the caravan with her and the hearse and whatnot had an accident. And that was the bigger news. This gets to lives. So is the life of that woman less than anybody who is in the bar? Is the life of the truck driver less than anyone who is in the bar? And I'm not diminishing the lives of the people in the bar at all, or how horrible it was, or the injuries, or any of that. But what bothers me is, yeah, the law enforcement guys, who the guy drove the car into them the other day, or about a year ago, you have a guy, a black guy, who is super racist, hates white people, and drives into a Christmas parade. And I can't remember his name. Is it because I'm old and I'm stupid? No. Is it because the media didn't hound his name day after day after day after day after day like they did Kyle in Kenosha? Everybody knows his name. Because they covered it over and over and over and over again. He acted in self-defense. This guy driving into the Christmas parade, it was based on hatred and he did it on purpose, but it didn't fit the narrative. The big problem when we look at all this purported hatred in America, and there is hatred in America, and it's being fueled. It's being fueled by politicians who want to take advantage of it. It's being fueled by quasi-activists who want to take advantage of it. I wonder if all these people with the Black Lives Matter signs and flags and all of that, do they get to go out and visit for a weekend the multi-million dollar homes out there in California that the organizers purchased with all of that money? Pretty sure they probably didn't. It's fueled by activists. It's fueled by the media, and it's fueled by politicians who want to take advantage of all of us. Short break. Back after this. House, right? And you can argue whether, you know, he provoked some of this by being there. And did he have a right to have the gun? Did he bring it across state lines? No. Was it there? Did he make mistakes that day? Or was he trying to be a good person? He's clearly trying to get graffiti off of walls earlier. He's trying to prevent businesses from being burnt down. In case you don't know, in Kenosha, a good chunk of the businesses that were burnt down were in the Black community and owned by Blacks. And that's what, that was the very first time I ever heard of Oath Keepers. Maybe they changed, but Oath Keepers went to Ferguson, Missouri to help out Black business owners whose businesses were being burned down, and the police stood by and watched this happen. When it comes to the driver I was talking about driving into the Christmas parade, his name's Daryl Brooks. And on the one hand, I was telling David I should feel bad because I don't remember the guy's name, and yet it actually proves my point. If he had gotten the coverage that other people had gotten, Officer Wilson in Ferguson or Kyle in Kenosha, there'd be no problem. My generation actually was, I think, the first generation that believed in Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and this idea that we're going to be judged on the content of our character and our hearts and who we are and not based on our race. What happened to that? There are more young people now, especially young people in Black communities, who know who George Floyd is and consider him to be a hero. Or at least, you know, the cause of change because of how racist that incident was. And you have Kanye Condoleezza Rice on one hand would be telling you that it's completely racist. Candace Owens, on the other hand, would be telling you that, no, you're not getting the true narrative on this. If you want to know what racial hate crimes are like, real ones, and one of the biggest unreported stories in my lifetime, it's Emmett Till. There's a new movie out that sanitizes it quite a bit in terms of just how violent and horrific the crime was. But there were people who were saying, well, Trayvon Martin is the new Emmett Till. And all that tells me is you don't know who Emmett Till was. You don't even know Emmett Till's story. Trayvon Martin and George Floyd, Michael Brown, they're not some new Emmett Till. They have nothing in common with Emmett Till. And yet the media and people, they carry this over and over and over again. George Floyd never should have died. I'm not defending what happened. I do think Kanye was right, or yay, whatever. If you look at the correct angles, you'll see that the officer's knee was not on the jugular vein or the throat or anything like that. And yes, you'll find pathologists who said this guy was in bad shape physically and overdosing and on, you know, all these chemicals that was in his body and probably left to his own devices would have just died of an overdose. That's a tragic death. That's a life that went wrong somewhere down the road but may have been turned around. You just don't know. He meets the right person. Maybe even he's in prison ministry, and he finds the Lord. And I'm not saying that that solves everything. I'm just saying that this actually could have been somebody who turned his life around and became a positive impact for a lot of people. But that's not what he was that day. He didn't deserve to die at all. And I don't know anybody who says that. I know a lot of people would say you've pushed this person to be a martyr, and especially, you know, a lot of liberal, progressive, woke, white people have bought into this whole thing, and they're suckers. They wrote checks over and over and over again, and a handful of people became millionaires over this. Did it really change things? Was it constructive in terms of changing things?
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th.
Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.